This is the KPTZ Compass, your local news magazine for the Northeast Olympic Peninsula. This week on the Compass, we go to a meeting of Port Townsend's first ever all-girl troop in the Boy Scouts of America. And then we explore a little-known problem causing major issues for life in and around the waters of Puget Sound. And now we go inside the Compass.
As suggested by its name, the Boy Scouts of America has been for boys only since its founding more than a century ago, until now. On February 1st of this year, female troops were allowed for the first time. Almost immediately, Port Townsend Scoutmaster Ron Lynn took advantage of the new opportunity and led the formation of female troop number 1478. The Compass attended one of the weekly Troop 1478 scout meetings and spoke with Lynn and his wife, committee member Jeanette Lynn, his 15-year-old daughter Evelyn Lynn, who is a senior patrol leader, and assistant senior patrol leader Robin Weaver, age 14, to find out more about their experiences thus far as the first female Boy Scout troop in Port Townsend.
Hey, Ron. Glad to be here with the. This is the weekly scout meeting for Troop
1478.
And you are the scoutmaster.
Yes, I'm the scoutmaster.
How long have you been doing this?
Well, with this troop, we just started in February, but I've been a scoutmaster or cubmaster for over a decade now.
Oh, fantastic. And you have how many children in scouts now?
I personally have 3 children in scouts, but in this troop, we have about 7 scouts right now.
And how many are girls?
All of them are girls. This is one of the first female troops. It's the first one of the first female troops on the peninsula, and certainly the first one in Port Townsend.
And when did that go into effect?
As of February 1st of this year, we started to allow scouts in, or females into scouts.
And how was that transition?
It was pretty easy for us because, well, we just started a new troop, and I have 2 daughters, so it wasn't difficult at all. There's been a lot of naysayers around, but we've done pretty good, I think, for our troop.
And how do the girls like it? Who are in this?
The girls love the heck out of it. Matter of fact, this last weekend, they had a really good time at Camporee. It did really well.
I understand that. I heard some news about how well they did.
Yeah. And you should definitely ask them about that. They'll be happy to tell you.
Okay. Well, let's get to the girls then.
Absolutely.
How long have you been in the Scouts, and actually, what is your name?
My name is Evelyn Lynn. I'm the current SPL. I have been in Scouts, since February, officially, and Sea Scouts before that.
How long have you been in Sea Scouts, or were you in Sea Scouts?
I'm still in Sea Scouts now. I was unofficially joined Sea Scouts when I was 12, and officially joined them as soon as I turned 13 and a half.
And what do you think of the experience so far in the Scouts?
It's honestly one of the best things I've ever done. I've had so much fun. The girls are amazing. I couldn't have asked for a better troop or leaders, and I'm loving it.
Is this an all-girl troop?
This is indeed an all-girl troop.
Okay. And I understand that you had a competition last week with other troops.
Yes, we had a competition, Camporee, 2019 Camporee in Port Angeles. There were a total of 7 groups, or 8 groups there competing, in which we won overall, which we are extremely proud of.
And we're the only all-girl troop there.
And you are?
Robin Sherwood.
And you've been in Scouts the same amount of time?
Since February, but my papa, he has a boys troop, so I kind of grew up with them since I was like 7 or 8.
So you know everything about scouting?
Well, not everything.
Pretty close.
So it's only been since February.
Mm-hmm,
It seems like a short amount of time, but you seem like you've both experienced a lot. Well, all the other girls in this troop, too.
Yeah.
How is everybody doing overall, all the girls in this troop, and adjusting if there is any adjustment?
I think everyone's doing really well. They're eager to work on their advancement, which a few of our girls have already earned their scout or working towards it, which is the very first rank in Scouts BSA. A few of the girls, you know, that's their very first time camping a few weeks ago, and had a few ups and downs, but I think overall everyone's getting the hang of it.
So have either one of you been in Girl Scouts or Campfire Girls? Or?
I was in Girl Scouts when I was 6 for 2 years maybe, but then I don't remember actually why I dropped out.
Yeah, I was 2, but my mom, she thought it was really fun, and my dad thought this was really fun, so I was kind of doing both, but I don't know, doing both is very stressful.
That's a lot of work, isn't it?
Yeah.
And a lot of time to do both. What do you think you'd pull out of this so far as one of the premier experiences you've had in Scouts so far?
Well, to me, personally, it's learning and developing social skills. I've never been particularly good at talking to people, but because I am the youth leader and pretty much the leader overall of the scout troop, I have to be good at it. I can't leave it to someone else. So it helps me develop my leadership skills and just learn new things.
You said you're the youth leader. What does that entail other than what you just described?
So I am the very top youth leader, which is the senior patrol leader. And that means that I'm the one who runs color guard whenever we do flag or anything. I'm the one who runs meetings. I make sure, you know, everything gets done. So if our scoutmaster, the adult leader, gives me a list of things to do, I delegate or I take on some of them myself.
And how do you guys, when you say you're in scouts now, what's the general kind of reaction that you get?
A lot of people think it's really good.
Some are surprised. Some, as we have experienced, are not happy. But we kind of just like shrug our shoulders, look the other way, and just go on with our business.
And that's about all we can do, really,
because,
you know, we're not going to go on and spend 20 minutes trying to explain to them why we believe this is a good thing when we could be out there proving it to them, doing things to help the community.
I think that's right. You proved it.
Yeah.
What was it, a week ago, Camper?
This last weekend, actually.
Yeah. This Saturday.
Last
Saturday.
What did you win?
We won first place overall.
Oh,
and
nice.
A couple other things.
Yeah.
In what events or?
We won first place overall over all of the events. We won. Let's start with the first place ones here.
So these are all the ribbons you won
in
just this past weekend?
Yes.
Wow.
We won first place in the Clove Hitch Challenge. We won first place in Pioneering Campsites, first place in Search and Rescue, first place in Log Raising, third place in Flagpole, and third place in Nitroglycerine Transport.
Nitroglycerine Transport? I hope that's not real.
No, I mean, it would have sort of been cool if it was, but it was a bucket full of rocks and water that we had to move without spilling.
Oh,
yeah.
That's great. And you won first place in that then?
No, third.
Third place in that one.
Okay. So as time goes on, I guess you're going to participate in some of these jamborees. You haven't yet. Right? These national jamborees?
The national jamborees, we hope to go to them. It's a little hard to, it's expensive, so we're still trying to build up. We're trying to work on paying for summer camp right now, which is nowhere near the amount it takes to go to jamboree. But we're hoping to get there one day.
When is summer camp?
Summer camp, there's several weeks. This year we will be going in July. There's, you know, several different camps around here. We'll be going to Camp Piggott, and there's only 4 weeks. We decided to go to the second week, which is the second week in July.
And how many girls would participate in that then?
Summer camp, everyone is going with us, I believe.
From our troop, there's 7 girls.
We have 7 girls in our troop, and everyone is going.
Yeah.
And how many do you think will show up from other troops?
Just females?
Just females.
I've only heard of one troop that's established on the Olympic Peninsula so far.
How many would show up altogether then? Just in total, how many scouts would be there?
Ooh, there's usually several hundred.
Yeah.
I was looking at the amount they had, and it was one of the weeks was at 200, 300 already. and the maximum capacity for camps is usually around that.
And of those 200, how many do you think would be girls?
Well, on the Olympic Peninsula, there's only us and
the swim troop.
The swim troop
that so far
we know of so far. So.
So maybe 20 girls
out of 200 total participants.
Yeah.
Approximately. Okay.
But that doesn't include people who are coming out of from out of district. Okay. I haven't heard anything about any other female troops yet, though.
Okay.
Yeah.
Well, thank you very much.
Thank you.
Thank you.
So, Jeanette, how long have you been involved with the Scouts?
With scouting, since my son was about 8 years old, and it's about 10 years. Okay. And with this troop, since February.
Okay. And how do you like it so far with this troop?
I love it. My daughter, for years, has been tagging along with her brother and wanting to be able to do all the things her brother could do, and we never found another organization to be able to do that with. We waited and waited and waited for this opportunity, and it finally came along, and she's been so excited about it. I mean, she's ready. She should probably be the very first or one of the very first Eagle Scouts on the Olympic Peninsula. She's that excited about it.
Oh,
so,
that's fantastic.
Yeah. Yeah.
How long is it going to take her to get to that?
I think it's a little over 2 years. Yeah, she will be getting her second rank, which is called the Tenderfoot, next week. She has her board of review for that. And, she's well on her way. She's trucking through.
So what is your role in this troop then, your position?
So I kind of am like the, I don't know, well, I'm the treasurer for one thing, and I'm a committee member, and that's kind of like, I do help with getting the fundraising organized, getting all the paperwork done, the medical forms and permission slips and all that kind of stuff, and making sure we have everything we need. And then filling in when my husband's not able to do things, okay. Which I've done before. But
so how are you finding the experience so far from the February 1st standpoint when girls were allowed into the Scouts?
It's a lot of fun. All the girls are really excited about the program. They really enjoy being able to go out and throw tomahawks like they got to do this last weekend, or saw with one of those, and I don't know the name of the saw, but it's this huge, long, like 12-foot saw, that takes two people. They love that. They got to build different structures by lashing wood together, and they made a sign for their campsite with their troop number on it, and made other useful things around the campsite, like things that will hold their lantern and stuff like that. And they all really like that kind of hands-on thing and creating things and the making the fires. They love that too.
Have you experienced any interest from other girls who are not in Scouts who now, because this has been established, are reaching out to you?
Yes, we've had people reach out to us through the Chief Seattle Council website, and we've picked up a couple of new Scouts since February through that way. Unfortunately, since I homeschool, I'm not involved with a lot of other kids, so I don't see a lot of kids directly. I do see kids from time to time if they see my girls in their uniforms. Ask, how are you getting to wear that uniform? Is that you have a troop or something? And so we've seen a little bit of that, but, not a whole lot from my experience.
Do you anticipate then a growth in this troop?
We hope so. There's a lot of misconception from people about how the girls in BSA works, and we're hoping to educate people and let them, understand that this is our girls only troop, and we want the girls to be able to have the same opportunities as the boys do. Get out and have that fun, learn the leadership skills that they need later in life. They can go to things every summer. There's a camp called YPT, which is youth leadership training, and it's just a place they can go and learn how to be a leader in the community. Mm-hmm. And I want that for my kids, and I'd love if all kids could be involved. I think it's a good moral program for kids to get them trained up to be good and healthy adults.
That's fantastic. Well, thank you very much.
Well, thank you.
With Female Scouts BSA Troop 1478, this is Jared Dufresne with KPTZ Community Radio News.
This week on The Compass, we hone in on a topic that we are all participants in, the production of wastewater and the resulting biosolids derived from the processing of those wastes. From drains and toilets to stormwater runoff, these waters carry biological waste material to our wastewater processing plants, with inherent challenges to our food systems and public lands through the use of biosolids. Join us as we delve into the ecosystem of solid waste disposal with Darlene Schoenfeld. I recently met Darlene Schoenfeld through the North Olympic Group, the local chapter for the Sierra Club. Darlene is passionate about the outdoors and has been advocating for environmental issues for nearly 3 decades. Darlene's doctorate in psychology and social welfare led her to Mississippi, where she first became involved with the Sierra Club. As a researcher, Darlene brings the same rigor to her work on the topic of biosolids. Her passion and deep concern for this topic is something we all contribute to, and she is speaking to us on behalf of the National Wastewater Residuals Grassroots Network from the Sierra Club. Darlene Schoenfeld, thanks for coming in today. Tell me about your work in the biosolids field.
Well, yes. First, I want to thank you for inviting me to talk about this very important, little-known issue that greatly impacts our life.
And I use the word biosolids, but we were talking earlier about what is more commonly known as
sewage waste, actually. It's the solids and the liquids that are going into the surface water bodies all over the world.
Let's start with defining biosolids or sewage sludge and its basic production, where it comes from, how it's managed, and the outputs that we're really concerned with.
Anything that goes down the drain, everything that goes down the drain that goes into a municipal wastewater treatment plant, and that can be 85, 90,000 chemicals and a whole array of pathogens mixed together. It's a very, very toxic brew. It can go through secondary treatment or what is called tertiary treatment, which is a little finer cleaning for the effluent. The cleaner the effluent, the dirtier the solid. So what happens is that these wastewater treatment plants separate the solids after some pre-cleaning and separate the solids from the liquid. The solids then become usually mixed with some other waste and sold as a compost or used as fertilizer in farms and in forests and sold as compost. The liquid, the effluent, which is almost as toxic, is emitted out into the surface water bodies. I have a picture that I brought that speaks 1,000 words.
It does.
It's indeed a political cartoon. And it's a whale breaching these toxic waters, the Puget Sound. It says, "Help, please, humans continuing to use Puget Sound as dump and sewer."
It's a powerful image as I look at it. And, you know, I was really struck by the crossover. We talk about plastics in our waters, but, you know, that is part of the equation, too. So what we put in is kind of core to what comes out. And it's striking to me that every part of our waste stream in terms of biological, there's no separation from the beginning. For example, hospitals create waste and our commercial industrial create waste. And it's just all brought into the same location for treatment. And I think it's striking too that you mentioned the cleaner the effluent, the dirtier the biosolid. And we could spend a whole episode talking about the effluent, but we're really talking about that biosolid that is represented as compost for a purchase. And then again, you said the effluent impacts because it's out into the waterways. It is directly produced or sent out, or is it in a reused fashion where, for example, we know of it used at golf courses,
no, et cetera? No, it's emitted from pipes. There's 106 just publicly owned wastewater treatment plants around just Puget Sound. And this goes on all over the world. We're a microcosm of what's happening elsewhere. But 106 of these spew 24/7 effluent from these wastewater treatment plants out into the open surface waters. And Washington State knows, and all the governments know, that 60% of Puget Sound pollution is from sewage. whether it's running off from the land or the direct emissions into the surface water bodies.
I'm curious, how is it that you became involved in this, and how you became concerned with wastewater usage? What informed your interest in this area? How did you look at this portion of our environment?
I don't remember how I got involved, but it was around the year 2000. I must have read something.
Well, I was really struck by one of the research papers you had produced for the Sierra Club, the wastewater usage in beer making. I mean, I know we're talking about biosolids, but it's pretty fascinating to...
It's the water.
It's the water, yeah. Yeah. So IPAs from California, I mean, it's not just one or two beer making producers using the wastewater treatment in their process. So you just honed in on biosolids, and we of course have the effluent we're talking about. I know that Washington State has a law that allows the effluent to be recycled for food crops and for recreational lands and farmlands. I've noticed that there's also a topic about biomes, how that those biosolids sitting on the farmlands create challenges for healthy soils. Could you talk a little bit about the soils being impacted on our farmlands?
Absolutely. These are spread on farmlands. There's a caveat here. Certified organic farmers cannot use this waste. But those that are not certified that think that this gives their soils a boost are told it's safe by EPA and the states. And there's some certain metals in there and some phosphorus and nitrogen, and the farmers believe that it's safe for their land and their crops, or even spreading on land where animals graze. This is highly toxic material. Plants uptake it. They uptake pathogens. They uptake the metals. They uptake different pesticides and other things that are in the solids. And then in the water, the animals are swimming in this and very affected by it. And it moves up the food chain. It's one animal eats another all the way to the whales. So when we think about the impacts to the whales and the salmon here, which are very precious to us, it isn't just the dams, which is a major issue here. It is also what they live in and swim in and eat in that we find when they're dead, and there's studies of their bodies and the salmon and the shellfish, the whales, loaded with these toxins.
The EPA actually has a statement from the Office of the Inspector General telling us that the toxic chemicals that they have an effluent toxicity test cannot actually test for all of the toxins at this point, and nor do they have an accurate process for tracking the results. And apparently there are permits issued without a need for some of these toxicity tests. And they've got this on their website from 2014 and again in
2018.
And so clearly even the EPA is saying we can't give you the information because we're not getting the information. And what is keeping the accuracy or compliance from taking place?
The EPA just started this back in 1992. They knew it wasn't safe. They fired their top scientists that said it wasn't safe. For a good background on this, I would urge your listeners to read Science for Sale by Dr. Lewis, L-E-W-I-S, David L. Lewis. There should be a copy in your library. And this goes into the entire history of what EPA did and how they moved this forward. And the first lawsuit that was won by a Maine farmer because he grazed his cattle on this on the sewage solids and lost everything. And he won a major lawsuit. But the EPA has basically let a lot of their scientists go that work on this. They don't want to cooperate. They don't. In 1992, they listed 9 metals and phosphorus and nitrate. The deal was that every 2 years they were to add more contaminants of concern. They have never in 27 years added another one.
Well, it would seem that we could be better participants in part of the solution if we're feeling stymied in the sense that EPA is not doing anything. How can we as contributors to this waste stream be better advocates in this topic?
Well, you could start calling the Washington State Department of Ecology and telling them not to permit these spreading the solids on land, giving these permits to haulers, getting out and telling the truth about what this is, and to stop the process. They know how bad it is. They keep promoting it across our state. And in February 2018, they also said that the liquid, the effluent, can be also placed on land, on our food crops, in wetlands, poured into aquifers. It just goes on. And they're all culprits in this very toxic situation. The governor could, who oversees ecology, could overnight say, stop this, but he's not.
What is the best way for folks to contact you? The organization that they could join into to have more of a voice on this topic?
Sure. Anybody wanting more information or to help on this can reach me at sewagesludge@olympus.net. And if you want a presentation on this, I'd be glad to do this. I do a lot of public speaking
on the subject. And Darlene, thank you so much for just whetting our appetite, if you will, for more knowledge on this very sobering impact on biosolids, sewage sludge. Darlene, thanks for coming in today.
And thank you for having me.
With Darlene Schoenfeld, this is Missy Nielsen for KPTZ News.
This week's Compass was written and produced by Jared Dufresne and Missy Nielsen. The Compass airs Mondays at noon and 5 p.m. with a repeat Saturday at noon. Exclusively here on KPTZ 91.9 FM in Port Townsend. For the news team here at KPTZ, I'm David Cunningham.